listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica, and I'm flying solo today because my lovely mother, Caroline Kilborn, and usual co-host, is doing her grandmother thing today and isn't able to be with us. She has 11 grandchildren, only two of which I'm responsible for. Or used to be responsible for. My kids are grown up. What a wonderful thing, have Mother's Day and your kids are grown, and so you have the responsibilities all done, but you still get celebrated. It's really, it's quite lovely. But we have a lovely guest with us today, Bonnie Michaels, who is co-author of Upside, How to Zig When Life Zags. Bonnie Michaels is president of Managing Work and Family, Inc., a work-life consulting and training firm since 1987, which is dedicated to helping organizations and workers solve work and personal life conflicts. She combines firsthand knowledge, practical ideas, and inspiration in her presentations. She's a trained actress, a regular contributor to radio, TV, and print, and co-authored Solving the Work-Family Puzzle and A Journey of Work-Life Renewal, The Power to Recharge and Rekindle the Passion in Life, and her new book with co-author Allison Blankenship, Upside, How to Zig When Life Zags. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Bonnie.
Well, I hope you're having an upsider day.
Oh, all my days are upside.
Good.
So you've been dealing with this, with the work-life balance issue, long before it was sort of the buzzword in business circles, it sounds
like.
Yes,
I actually was one of the pioneers, and you usually work on things that you need to work on yourself, and I was a single parent struggling to find the balance and work in the corporate world, and I kept thinking, if I could have all these things, I would be a better worker, a better parent, a better friend, all those things. And so I sort of put my head and heart and skills together to really develop this organization, which evolved so much because of the changing workforce. I mean, back when I started this in 87, women were really just entering the workplace, and there were really no support systems at all. So it's been a very long journey and very interesting to see all the patterns and changes from helping women to helping women with children, and then just helping couples, and then singles saying, wait a minute, I need balance too. And so working with companies and individuals over these years has been very inspiring and very challenging, and I'm very grateful for the work that I've been able to do.
Now, Bonnie, what inspired you to become a writer? Were you just learning so much from your work that you wanted to share with the wider world, or did you always want to be a writer?
Well, that's really an interesting question for me, because not too many people actually ask me that, and I figured you probably would. And I started thinking about it, and I think that underneath, I have always wanted to write. I think I wrote my first little story when I was 8 about an Arabian horse. And then I had some really wonderful teachers in high school, but later on in college I had some that were not very good, and they did not really promote this whole idea. So I decided to really use my voice as a speaker more. And then as things began to change, and I think you probably just hit it on the head, is that when I really had something to say that was based on experiences and stories from other people, then I felt this really strong emphasis and courage to say, yes, I can really write about this, and it will help people. And I think that's how it has evolved. And I suddenly found how much I liked writing articles and things that I really had not thought about. It was not really on my sheet of goals to accomplish. It really was an evolution, and it's been wonderful.
Great. And is Upside your third book?
Yes, it's the third book, and I think the hardest to write.
Now, why is that?
Well, I think that coming up with a workable strategy for people who are experiencing so many changes was really a challenge. And I wanted this to be something that would apply not to just people who lost their jobs, but people who were experiencing any kind of drastic change or loss in their life. And certainly there have been so many over the last couple of years since we've hit this session. We've been doing workshops using the book for men and women who are in their 60s, who have suddenly felt, you know, this horrendous pinch with finances, and their whole world has been turned upside down. Young people who can't get jobs, cannot figure out, you know, what it is that they really need to be doing to be able to move forward. And so coming up with, we have 29 strategies for what we call sustainable success. And I felt it was very important to be holistic about this, not just about a career or not just about finances, but it would really have to encompass all the things that affect our lives. Because if one piece is not succinct or in going along with the rest of your life, for instance, if you're focused on your career but your lifestyle is way out of balance, it's not going to work. It's not going to be sustainable. Mm. So I took a lot of time to research in areas that I hadn't researched before, a lot of economics, finances, even some history, of course psychology, and then the stories. And so it was a longer process of research for me, and I'm proud of what we've come up with, because it is a book that has a long shelf life. This is something that people will be able to use as their lives change, and they could go back and see what they need to tweak again, and they may be more interested in one aspect of their lives right now, and then as things change, they can go back and look at something else with a different set of eyes. And working with my wonderful partner, Allison Blankenship, has been a dream. You always hope to have a partner that can compromise, come in with new ideas, and looks at things very differently. And that's one of the things I appreciated about this process. It was a very creative process, and it should be fun, and it was.
Now, Bonnie, were your other books co-authored as well?
They were. The first one was co-authored with someone who was very much involved in the more corporate world of work-life balance. And my second partner was my husband, which was a real challenge.
Wow. Yes.
The second book was based on a year-long journey that we took to get renewed. And we went away with one suitcase each and a round-the-world ticket and an idea of volunteering and learning and taking classes around the world for a year.
Wow.
We didn't actually have any intentions of writing a book, but when we came back, everyone said, oh, your stories are so inspiring. You really need to write about it. So my husband and I wrote it, and it was a challenge.
Wow. Well, if you could travel with somebody with one suitcase for a year, you could do anything together.
That's true. That's true. My husband's an engineer and in logistics by profession, and of course I'm the storyteller, so the compromise was coming from, you know, crossing every T and dotting every I to having a good story.
Okay. Now, I notice throughout your book, throughout Upside, even that you use a lot of stories.
Yes.
And how do you find the stories, and are they things that, you know, it's just in the whole process of finding these stories, they're stories of individuals who have gone through, profound changes in their lives and how they dealt with them and how it relates to the tips that you're giving in the book. How did you collect those, organize those, decide which one fits where? Do you change
process?
Do you?
And I do think stories are very important, because you need to know that the strategy really has been used in some way and it's worked. And I would say that we probably spent as much time researching stories as we did just doing basic research for the book. And in terms of finding them, once you sort of say it out loud and start telling everybody that you know, professionally and personally, what you're looking for, you'd be amazed at how people will say, oh, I just met someone, or, you know, someone, a friend of someone. And we probably had more stories than what we could really write about. And then as the book evolved, we wanted to take the best stories that would fit in with the strategy and that would also be inspiring. We didn't want it to be all about, you know, finding a job, that we wanted to look at the other aspects of, you know, success and happiness and people who have changed their lifestyles, simplicity, and then the different ages. We wanted to really incorporate people who were younger and people that were older who were making very inspiring changes.
And do you ever take like a couple of different people and blend the stories, or are they all the ones that you use in your book unique to a single person?
I think for the most part it's been one single story that we've taken, you know, the best parts of it to make it very applicable to what we're talking about. That seems to really work out the best way.
I'm curious as to why you choose each time to use a co-author rather than writing the whole book yourself. What are the motivations
question.
For doing it
that
My
goodness,
way?
I never thought about that. I think that I enjoy the process much more. I'm not a loner type. I really like to engage in problem solving and the creative process. And through the years, I've had partners in my business. I've had partners on lots of different projects. And I think for me, it really helps to promote my own creative process. And I think it's very good when you're writing nonfiction to be able to have the kind of a partner who will be a devil's advocate on everything. I think when you're telling a story in fiction, you depend on certain people, your editors certainly, and they're always mentors that are working with you. But I think when you're writing something like this, that has to do with changing people's lives, you want to make sure that you're not getting, you know, stuck in one area and not seeing the bigger picture. And I think with Allison, she is younger than I am, and I really appreciated her point of view, even from the age and stage that she's in, that I sort of forgot about, and how she looks at things, and that was a real compliment to the writing. So I think to answer your question, I really enjoy it. If it's a good partner, it's they add something very meaningful and creatively to it, because sometimes we get stuck in a pattern, we don't even see it, and then your partner says, wait a minute, we need to lighten this up, or we need to find more of this, because you haven't been able to see it. And my partner is a trainer as well as myself, and so the nice thing about this is that we can go out and use the book for a lot of our training sessions together.
Right.
And, you know, work should be fun, and this is definitely fun when I get to work with her.
You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Bonnie Michaels, author, co-author of Upside, How to Zig When Life Zags, with 29 Tips for Sustainable Success. Now, in this book, Bonnie, you discuss how the not known is the new normal. What do you mean by that?
Well, the not known are things that haven't happened, or could be technology, and will happen, and when they do, it will change our lives. For example, let's take a look at technology. 15, 20 years ago, all of the gizmos that we're using today were definitely not knowns. And now they are known, and they affect our lives in some ways positive, in some ways negative. And what's happening now, the not knowns are coming faster and faster and faster.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, just take a look at the weather patterns this last year all over the world. I mean, we can sort of expect to have bad weather sometimes, but the not knowns and the extremes of the not knowns have really affected people's lives drastically. And if we begin to realize that things aren't just going to calm down and go back to the way they were, that probably the not knowns are going to keep coming, and they may come faster and more furious because of all the changes globally that are going on. The economies in all of the countries in the world are experiencing a terrible and difficult financial time, and this is going to affect all of us. Our natural resources, the job market, and I'm always waiting for the next shoe to drop. That's kind of why that sounds terrible, but my antennas are always up thinking about, okay, what are the possibilities of what could possibly happen to affect my life, and how do I need to prepare for it? And I think what we want people to know is that they need to be kind of in a survival mode more often than not. Because when you start getting really comfortable that things are really good and, you know, I can just relax, something may, you know, be pulled out again, you know, the rug under your feet to surprise you. And instead of having these horrible surprises all the time, it's better to be prepared. So we talk a lot about the not known, and you can look at it in terms of not only finances, but looking at the changes. Who would have guessed that Obama would have been president? I mean, that was certainly an unknown, and how that has changed. I mean, a not known, and how that has changed the lives of people. So I think that.
And the difference between not known and unknown is
right. The unknown are things that we probably won't ever know about, such as, is there life after death? You know, after we figure that out, we really won't be able to talk about it. So the not known are things that will occur, and when it does, it will change our lives.
Wow. Now, one of the things you recommend is that readers need to rewrite the rules. Which rules need to be rewritten? All of them?
Well, I hope not. I think that we have to look again at those expectations and things like, you know, if you work really hard, you'll get a raise. Well, that probably isn't going to always happen, particularly in this day and age. You know, like maintain the status quo, don't rock the boat, and stick with the traditional approach. Well, that's the kind of old rule. The new rule might be creativity rules. What worked 6 months ago may not be applicable today. Constantly think outside the box. We have a whole chart here on things such as loyalty, compliance, prosperity. I think prosperity is a really interesting topic. You know, I think we grew up in this country, at least, you know, I do, that anyone can achieve the dream because our resources and opportunities are endless.
Right.
Well, I think that maybe that's changed. It makes me a little sad because, you know, I always felt that anything was possible, and that's how I raised my daughter, you know, the American dream. You can be anybody. You can be anything. You can do anything. And I hope that for many people that will be true, but I think we have to have a little bit lower expectations because of what's going on in the world. And it doesn't mean that you don't have goals, and it doesn't mean that you don't work to achieve success and happiness. It's just that it's going to look different than what you thought it was going to look like. And if you constantly have expectations that can't be realized, people that are working really hard to achieve some kind of a material success, they may be very disappointed because it may not be possible in this day and age. And so it's kind of rewriting the rules, rewriting your definition of the American dream, tweaking your model for success and happiness. And this is a longer process. This is something that we want people to take their time with because they're very important things. People that have read the book say that they read the book through first, and then they go back and really answer many of the questions. We do have a lot of reflective questions. We want people to be very specific so that they can really think through all aspects of their lives so that they can sustain over a long period of time. I think in this country, we've always been very short-term oriented. Get the job done quickly and don't think about tomorrow. And I think we're in a new era where we have to think that every decision that we make, personally and professionally, will have a very big effect on our ability to be successful over the long term. when my husband and I came back from our year-long journey, we learned so much about life in other countries. And most people do live or plan more on a sustainable way in other countries. And that was very inspiring for us. Mm. And when we came back, we really reworked our whole model for living and working to feel more comfortable about being able to sustain over a long period of time.
Well, I think
so we weren't surprised when the recession came. And we were really well prepared financially and in many other ways.
Well, I think part of this change that you're talking about is maybe instead of looking at this as lowered expectations, perceiving it as different expectations that maybe are really more fulfilling. So perhaps it's lower in the sense of consumerism or materialism, but much greater in the sense of community and time and enjoyment of life and fulfillment. And so we don't necessarily have to look at it as something as, oh, things are really hard now and none of us are ever going to have as good a life as our parents did. I don't like looking at it that way.
I think you're absolutely right. I didn't mean to misconstrue that definition, but I think that
I think that's what your book is saying too.
Yes, it is. Yes. And I'm just thinking, you know, from the personal level, after we came back after that year-long journey, and you know, we looked at all the things that we had in our house and everything, we thought, we don't need these things. You know, we've been really happy for a year with one suitcase. You know, it's like, we could, you know, happiness is really not about accumulating these things.
Right.
And it is about having more time. And we've certainly adjusted our lives so that we don't make as much money, but we're really much happier because we do have time for volunteering, time for, you know, community work, time to just be, to just reflect and enjoy the moment. And clearly, for us, that's what the happiness has been about, and it's been a great lesson.
Well, Bonnie, would you share a section of the book Upside with our listeners today?
Sure. I think that I'm going to start up with the very first chapter, and it's called To Wake Up to a New Reality. The Wizard of Oz, a groundbreaking film for its time, introduced a concept that is still true today. Life as we know it has changed, and there's no going back. When Dorothy landed after a tornado ripped her farmhouse off its foundation, she cautiously opened the front door, having no idea what to expect on the other side. To her amazement, she discovered the breathtaking technicolor beauty of Oz. Because the tornado placed Dorothy into the unfamiliar landscape of Oz, she had little choice but to begin her quest. Amid fears and dangers lurking in the background, she and her new friends continued on the path, dealing with challenges as they occurred. They solved problems and explored new avenues while seeking their heart's desires. Along the way, they gained wisdom and confidence. Like Dorothy, many of you are experiencing an Oz moment. Your world has been knocked off its foundation and is in turmoil. You look back with longing at your seemingly predictable life before the tornado and feel a bit lost as you embark upon unfamiliar experiences. These tornadoes are a natural part of life, although they may appear to be occurring more frequently in the 21st century. If you lost your life savings, a job, home, or loved one, your life has been turned upside down. You may find yourself holding your breath, waiting for things to return to normal. One fact is very clear as our economy emerges from a difficult time. What is normal has changed. There is a new reality now, one that is important to understand if you're going to create long-lasting, sustainable success. It's easy to focus on the negative aspects of this new reality. Industries and jobs that have disappeared, many businesses aren't hiring, and getting small business loans can be difficult. Statistics on the economy change daily. It isn't necessary to depress you further by reiterating what you already know. And that's the key phrase, what you already know. Like Dorothy, you are on the threshold of a new life situation, your personal Oz. As you embark on the unfamiliar terrain ahead, we will help you find the upside of every downside. You will learn to release what you already know, uncover the positive aspects of your new reality and embrace in its opportunities and beginnings. The goal is to create sustainable success, a satisfying way of life that is achievable, manageable, and ongoing. We'll give you the building blocks to unlock the upside of every situation and maintain long-term stability amidst ever-changing situations and opportunities. So that kind of brings you into the book.
And then you start with your tips. You have 29 tips throughout the book.
That's right.
For finding the upside of every situation.
Yes.
So do you have a favorite?
I really liked the chapter on happiness. Because I think about it a lot. I think we all do. You know, are we happy? What is happiness? I think I read more things about happiness than anything else. And, you know, there's a wonderful book called Bliss, and it's the story of this man who goes around the world to find the happiest countries. And this is so amazing to me. You know, Bhutan and Iceland, Switzerland and Denmark are the happiest country. And the United States is somewhere down on the 36th level. And it was interesting to take a look at what are all the aspects in different cultures that create happiness. And I have truly enjoyed this, and I have been working with a group in Seattle that it's a grassroots group called Take Back Your Time, and they have combined their efforts with what's called Sustainable Seattle, and they are focusing on making Seattle a very happy place to live.
Sounds good.
I really do love to talk about happiness, and I like to think about it and encourage people to really go through a process of what happiness really means. And actually, for me, it just boils down to a few very simple things. I mean, having meaningful people in your life, you know, meaningful work, and having good health. Clearly, that is, for me, the happiness.
Right.
We all need shelter and food, but it's very clear that the rest that we think we need to be happy really isn't important.
So, Bonnie, one of the other tips that really caught my eye was create your own crystal ball. What do you mean by that?
Yes. Well, I think as you begin to rework your success model, we're encouraging people to create their own life and looking into a crystal ball that is realistic and also has all the ingredients for happiness and finding passion, and to really create your life based on realistic expectations and sort of sustainable lifestyles. You have to dig a little bit deeper. I think a lot of people are looking for that one word answer for their job, for success, or whatever it is that they're searching for their lives. And I think that what we've learned over all the interviews and our own personal experiences is that it's up to us to really do the homework to be able to create the life that is meaningful. And by looking, the crystal ball really has a lot to do with being able to do some serious research about emerging trends, being able to hang out with people who have insights, who've done some extraordinary work in researching what the future might look like, and then being able to take that information and sort of gathered and look at what the life could be based upon those projections. So a lot of people look at jobs, for instance, as, you know, what are the highest paying jobs, or what are the, you know, the jobs that are most likely get. Well, those jobs may not last. That's just the short term. And we're asking people to really go beyond it, look at the economics of the future. Look at the natural resources. Choose where you live, where you work, based upon lots of information. And I think that is a long process that most people are not familiar with. and they haven't quite learned how to do this. And if anything, it would be thrilling to me to get young people who are just starting their lives to begin to think about and anticipate the future so that they can create their own crystal ball.
Well, not only can you create your own crystal ball, you actually can create the future.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Very optimistic way of looking at it.
Now, Bonnie, there are many, many self-help books out there. We've interviewed quite a number on the show over the years. What makes Upside different?
I think the most important thing is that it's a very holistic process. As I mentioned earlier, we didn't focus on just careers or just money. We really looked at every aspect of our lives that are going to create sustainable success. And they have to all be congruent, or it just isn't going to work. You know, lifestyle choices, developing that inner core, being aware of natural resources, you know, simplicity, community, support systems, money, relationships, transitions, careers, all those things need to be looked at in order to make a total successful life. I see so many young people who say, oh, I finally got the job, but they're not earning enough money to pay for all the things in the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the minute I mention simplicity, I get these looks like, does that mean bread and water? And I'll say, no, but you need to take a look at your life and what it is that you really need, because if you start spending more than what you can afford, you're going to be back again in a position where you're not going to have sustainable success. So we're really asking people to look at the big picture. What is happiness? What is success? What is your relationship to money? What are your networks? What are your passions? What are your skills? How are you developing your inner core? Because everything is related. And I think that is probably one of the things that sets us apart. And it's also very forward-thinking. We're really asking people to think about the future. And with the exercises, because we're trainers, we really include a lot of exercises. And it's a workbook, and it's got a long shelf life, and people can continue to go back to it and answer questions at a different point in their life when things have changed. So I think that's definitely what has set us apart from other books.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us today on Writers' Voices. And
I've enjoyed it very, very much, and I hope that you can always find the upside. Sounds like you do.
I certainly give it my best shot, that's for sure. And your book is available on Amazon?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and our website is upsidethebook.com, and we have lots of workshop activities on there and questionnaires and videos, and people can go in there. And we have a wonderful newsletter if people would like to subscribe.
Great. So thank you once again for being with us. And now we are going to take a short musical break while we get ready for our next guest. As a teenager in Vancouver, Anne Mortefee began singing at coffee houses and then with the legendary Josh White. And she became very instrumental in some musical theater throughout Canada, throughout the country. And she's known throughout the world for her passionate and honest performances. And what we were just listening to was part of the companion CD from her new book, In Love with the Mystery. And I believe that was probably her husband, Paul Horn, playing that we just heard. And Anne and Paul are here in the studio with us today for Writers' Voices. Welcome to Crew. Welcome to Fairfield. Welcome to Writers' Voices, Anne.
Oh, thank you, Monica. It's just lovely to be here.
Did you just arrive yesterday, I understand?
No, we've been here a couple of days. And just loving it.
Oh, good. Is this your first time here?
First time for both of us, yeah.
Wow.
Well, actually, Paul was here in the 70s at the very beginning. And so here we are back again.
So why did it take so long to get you here?
We've been busy.
Well, tell us a little bit about what brings you here this time.
I'm doing, Paul has been invited back for a long time. He's, he was one of the original teachers of TM with the Maharishi way back in the 60s. And they've been trying to get him back here for many, many, many years.
I'm sure.
And just been very busy. So we decided, Michael kept inviting us, and we decided that we were able to come at this time. And so we're really, really thrilled.
And Anne, you're doing a workshop Sunday, I believe.
Yeah, it's not so much a workshop. It's going to be a presentation. I'm sharing writings from In Love with the Mystery, which is the name of the book, and also talk about some of my time in Africa with the Zulu Sangomas, which are Zulu shaman, and how I came to work a lot with indigenous people around the world. And so that's what brought us here.
So tell us how you came to write this book. It seems like a really wonderful story about how this book came to be.
It was very interesting because it was never intended to be a book. So I've had a practice for many, many, many years, about 35 years, maybe 40 years, of getting up at 5 in the morning. I love it when the birds are waking up and the world is sleeping, and I just love that time. And I've had a quiet time every morning just to reflect and think and read and meditate, do whatever. And Paul gave me a calendar that was so beautiful. It had wonderful photographs in it and a little space for every day, maybe 2 inches by 4 inches. And I thought, oh my goodness, this book is too beautiful to say 4 o'clock dentist appointment. So what I did was I decided to make a practice. And I had spent time in India many years before with a man named Shankarananda, who taught me my meditation. And I'd never been able to contact him since then because, he lived in India and it was hard to get the mail through. And so I just let it pass. And I ended up writing every morning at 5 o'clock one little thing in the amount of space that I had in this book. And my writing got smaller and smaller.
So you could fit more and more into that space.
And it was just inspirational things that came through. And I would wake Paul up and go, oh, my goodness, look what came today. I'm so excited by it. It's just and we chat about it over breakfast and say, gosh, that's a beautiful writing. And at the end of the year, it was done. Wow. And it happened that my sister-in-law came and she looked at the book and she happened to open it and she said, oh my, she saw the tiny, 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 tiny handwriting. And she said, oh my gosh, this is, who did this? And I said, oh, it's my writing every morning for the last year. And she said, do you mind if I read some? And so she started to read it and she said, Annie, this should be a book. Aww. And I said, I don't do that anymore. I'm not doing any more organizational stuff. And she said, I could do that for you.
Wow.
And so she put the book together, and it turned out that one of Canada's top photographers is a very dear friend of mine, Courtney Milne. Mm. And Courtney said, here are the keys to the kingdom. You can have any photos you want. Just take anything you want. And Diane Foote, who designed the book, she said, oh, I want to help you do this too. It was really effortless. And Nancy, my sister-in-law, just did all the organization, and there's the book.
Well, the result is a beautiful book.
It is.
I mean, the design and the photography, the quality of the paper.
Yeah, and it's all recycled paper.
Wow.
All recycled paper and beautifully done. I mean, we wanted to make it a thing of beauty because we felt it was just a gift. And everyone who was involved putting the book together just said, you know, this has happened. Nature has supported us so absolutely to pull this off that they even made a mistake with something which allowed it to be cheaper than it was supposed to be. So, you know, on every level, we felt like we were being supported for the book to come into.
So this is the easy path to publication?
It's the easy path. Just don't make any plans.
No attachment.
No attachment. Absolutely none. And then Paul and I we live in Arizona for the winters, and we were heading home, and I said to Paul, why don't we do a CD, or he said to me, one of us said, where we just go into the studio and I'll choose some passages, which we did. We called two friends in Vancouver, and we said, we're passing through on such and such a date. Could you join us? We literally, Monica, we went into the studio, and I had the things written down. We went in. And 45 minutes later, the CD was finished.
Oh, my.
And to the point, literally, that I would see on the page ahead of me that there was a kind of an emotional buildup that would say, you know, was talking about something that had energy, and then it dropped off into silence. And I would say, you know, into the something of silence. And I'd see it coming up, but there's nothing I can do. I just following the music. Like they heard me, they would rise up in the music and then descend down into this stillness, and I'd say, silence.
Mm.
It was amazing. And we all came in. At the end of it, we looked at each other and said, oh, what was that? That is so beautiful. You know, really, I can say it's beautiful because I just happened to be there. I don't think it has that much to do with
me. So it's, the whole thing was like one take?
One take.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we went in and we, you know, we tweaked a few things to, you know, to mix it and all the things you have to do.
Well, you know, one thing that's always impressed me about musicians, a truly professional musician can do that because of years and years and years of practice.
Of practice. And and I think it's the excitement about it is that you know your craft, but then what you have to do is totally surrender to the moment and be in the moment so absolutely that you have no agenda of where the chords are going to go, what's going to happen. You really are, and you have to unite on a level where you're listening to the same muse. You're receiving the same instructions. So it's a very deep listening.
That must be a really profound unifying experience.
Oh, it's wonderful. We literally, at the end of it, we all got up and hugged each other because we just went, what was that? Oh, I'm so glad I was here.
Oh, you know? And how many people were involved?
Four of us.
Four. Wow.
And all master musicians. All master. And I sing and speak, but they're the master musicians, yeah.
Now, so you were singing some of the words that you had written?
I didn't sing the words, but what would happen is, you know, I had no plan when I went in to sing at all, but I do a lot of singing in my life. And when there'd come a passage where suddenly the feeling would well up in me and I'd just start to sing. So there are several passages where I'm singing, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to listen ahead of time because I just got this morning.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But this is, I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Oh, thank
you. Would you like to read something from the book for our listeners?
Okay, shall I just open the book?
Just open the book.
And okay, so we don't know what's coming.
And this is Anne Mortefi, who's our guest today on Writer's Voices.
The Dream of Life. Look back at your childhood. Remember your youth. These memories are like a dream floating among dreams, even though at the time they appeared so real. When we are gone from this life, we will look back at our time here as a dream among dreams. We have power to influence the dream we are dreaming now. We can awaken and begin to witness the events of our lives as passing phantoms in a mirage. They are real, and yet they are not real. It is never too late. Our life can become the dream we were born to dream.
And I gotta say, this is much better listening to you even than reading it on the page.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Do another one, please.
Another one?
Yes. Or even two. I think we have time for
a couple
more.
I'll flip through the pages and see what the universe decides. Allow the self to emerge. Do not ask for God to come to you. Allow the self, the vast mystery, to emerge from the depths of your own being. Recognize that you have never, in anything but your own mind, been separate or apart from the great mystery. Identify yourself as being one with the Creator. This is what we call self-realization. Loss makes way for gain. Gain fills the place that once was filled by what is lost. Neither is more important than the other. They move like spiraling dancers as we evolve. Like two pistons of an engine, they empower our lives with change. When we accept one or the other with equal equanimity, we have finally surrendered and become one with life.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, when you were writing these things down, you were in your little tiny print, which I do want to point out that the book is not in little tiny print.
No, it's not in tiny print.
For those of us who have the bifocals, that's an important point. Were you self-editing as you wrote, or was it just a...
It's a little of both because, you know, I've been writing for many, many years, so I have a love affair going on with words and how they flow together. So I can only say it's like a co-creation, you know, in that my own discipline, like a musician, you have to know your instrument. So,
right.
So, but I was completely yielded. And from the moment I started writing, I had no idea where I was going. Like one of them, I heard a train in the distance passing. We live high on a mesa overlooking a vast desert where we're really out in the boonies. And I would sit at the edge of the veranda at 5 a.m. and I heard a train go by and my hand started to say, "The sound of a distant train." And then it went on from there and I had zero idea where we were going. And it was all about the yearning that we have for to get on that train, to go somewhere we've never been before, and how so many of us have this deep yearning and how follow that yearning. And so often the words would start out of something that was happening in the moment. So, and I just
and
followed.
You just followed.
And often would go, "Oh, oh, 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 this is so lovely."
And then when you went to collect? Did you put everything that you had written during that year?
No, we didn't put everything in because we figured the book would be too big.
Okay.
And we wanted to make it beautiful, so that means 300 and some odd pages. And we wanted to just something so that it wasn't something that people felt, oh, I've got to read this every day or, you know.
Right.
What I did is I just surrendered, and I gave it to a friend of mine, Carol Sill, who has been a Sufi for many years, a wonderful woman. And she went through, and she just she saw that some of them said similar things.
Okay.
And so we eliminated some of them. She helped me with that.
Mm-hmm. And did you have you published before? Or is this, you said you've been writing all for many, many years. Had you published before?
Not a book. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I did do a book. I did. I forgot that book. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you know John Robbins, who wrote Diet for a New America and was one of the very strong people in for vegetarianism and so forth.
Right, right.
And John and I have been very dear friends, and he and I wrote a book, The Awakened Heart, many years ago. But I've done a lot of writing in theater.
So you write
musicals and ballet scores, and I've worked in film and done one woman shows. So I've always written monologues and poems and stories.
So you've written a one woman show?
I've had four one woman shows.
Whoa, yeah. That must be really hard.
Well, actually, the thing that's been great about it is that because I'm also a singer, once you know where you're going, you write the songs, I write a lot. You write the songs, and then you find out where they're going. And so, for instance, I did which I'll be talking about, actually, on Sunday. I wrote a musical called When the Rains Come, which was an anti-apartheid thing back in before.
And you're originally from?
I'm from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I wrote Into the Heart of the Sangoma, which was became a two-person show. And you know, it's almost like once you know where you're going, the muse tells you what it wants to say.
Well, what's really amazing about it is, you know, it's such a complete creative endeavor, a one-woman show, because you're writing a storyline and the music and performing as well. It's just
wow,
that's everything.
It is everything. And every so often you go, okay. You know,
so your presentation Sunday, May 8th, from 1:45 to 4 p.m. at MUM Dalby Hall. And is that open? Is it just for women or is it for everyone?
It's just for women.
It's just for women.
It's Mother's Day on Sunday.
Yes, it is.
And we thought, wouldn't it be lovely to do something just for women? So I'm going to be sharing a lot about what I did with the Zulu Sangomas in South Africa. And they're the women shaman. And
Oh, great.
I'll also be singing, and I'll be reading, and I'll be performing something, and it'll be a potpourri.
And do you have it all, like, scheduled out, or is it going to be...
Oh, it's a flow. I have certain things, like, I know what the story is I'm going to tell.
Okay.
But other than that, it's going to be a happening. And, you know, I've discovered that what often happens is whoever is there... their needs actually, or who they are, or what the energy is in the room, actually dictates where I go.
Mm. So you've done this type of presentation before?
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Well, I'm think it'll be quite a wonderful afternoon.
Really. I think it's going to be, everything leading up to it feels very good. And all the women I've met who I'm working with are terrific. Oh. And, you know, I think that women need to be together. And I think that when you have a room full of women, there's a power that is different than when there's mixed groups. And so my hope is that things will come out of me that, you know, I sort of speak like I write. You know, I start a sentence and then go, oh, that's where I'm going.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So I think...
Again, you can improvise like that because you have so many years of practice at performing and presenting and doing things by the script, that now you can go off script.
Yes, very true. And I think also I'm better at improvising. You know, when I'm talking with you, I don't know what we're going to say, but we're improvising.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's what a conversation is, isn't it?
That's what a conversation is.
Yeah, so we shouldn't be afraid of improvising because that's what we do. Pretty much every moment of the day.
And when you're on stage, you can get to a place where you really, really relax in such a way that you're having a conversation with who's there.
Mm.
And sometimes I find myself saying things that I go, gosh, I never expected that.
Wow.
You know, never expected that. And someone will come up after and say, you know, my mother died yesterday. And when you said that, that totally changed my experience.
Wow.
So you never know what's going to happen.
Well, let me just, we're out of time. But
oh, too bad. You're such a lovely woman.
Oh, thank you. But I do want to remind people that this is Sunday, May 8th, 1:45 to 4 p.m. at MUM Dalby Hall. The tickets are available at the MUM bookstore. And I think maybe, are they at the chocolate? No, just the MUM bookstore. And then on Sunday, May 15th at 7:45 p.m., Paul Horn and friends will be performing in the Golden Dome, and that's a, you know,
oh,
that's for everyone.
Oh, mustn't miss
that's
my
for
beautiful
everyone.
Husband, I tell you. And GMDO is sponsoring the whole thing, which is wonderful, you know. This Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Writer's Voices.
Oh, thank you, Monica.
I hope I get a chance to talk with you some more.
I hope so, too. So,
and if you're listening on Friday, please stay tuned for Planet Erstwhile. James Moore has a number of guests today, Swami Biyanananda, Teresa Mullen-Fries, Bob Yap, Michael Holley, Mackenzie Kessel, Richard Register, and more. And if you are listening Monday morning, have a great week and see you next week on Writer's Voices.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.